if he knew the truth about his son's spiritual practices. "Forgive me if I sound ungrateful, but can you elaborate on how this would help me?" asked Cedric. "I own the land, and you would own the right to work and control it," explained Warren. "And you keep whatever gold you can mine out of it. After paying me an owner's commission, of course." He beamed. "If you get lucky, you could strike it big right away, and solve all your financial problems." "But most people don't strike it big right away," pointed out Jasper. "Otherwise, Haddison and the other gold colonies would be filled with mansions instead of shanty towns." "Your offer is very kind, but Adelaide's fee must be paid in less than 2 months in order for her to meet the terms of her contract. There are no guarantees of that."
"I'll guarantee the fee," said Warren. "Should he not mine enough within the time frame, I'll cover the fee to meet her contract, and his debt will switch over to me."
Warren's face was open and guileless, but I felt a chill run down my back. I didn't like the idea of Cedric being indebted to someone, especially this someone. And I certainly didn't trust Warren's being so generous about all of this. His mother, as it turned out, didn't like it either.
"Warren," she scolded, "this is preposterous. You have no business giving him a claim title. You don't owe him anything. We were supposed to come here to express our outrage and hire an attorney to file a formal grievance. Helping him further this illicit relationship was never part of our discussion this morning."
Warren turned to her, exasperated. "What good would any of that do, Mother? Soothe your hurt feelings? Or do you expect me to bully them into letting me marry a woman whose heart belongs to another?"
"Well, not any more. Not now that she's used goods."
I shot to my feet, angered at being referred to as goods again, and in a much less flattering way. "I beg your pardon, Mistress Doyle, but there's nothing used here. I'm still a virgin, and will stay that way until my wedding night. It's true, this situation has gone in a direction none of us expected, but my morals have remained the same."
Viola crossed her arms. "I don't like it, Warren. I don't like it at all.
And I don't like it that I have gold just lying around in Haddison. Squatters have already started moving in. I want honest, hard-working men I can trust on those claims. Law-abiding men who follow the rules. Would I have liked to marry Adelaide?" His eyes held me for a fraction of a second as I sat back down beside Cedric. "Yes. But as I said, I could hardly marry her knowing she loves someone else. And so, instead of a wife, I have a potential settler. Mr. Thorne here is exactly the kind of person I'd like to help build Haddison into greatness, assuming he wants to stay. Once your debt is paid, you'd be under no obligation, Mr. Thorne. But our colony is going to need people like you, like both of you, to become a civilized place."
Considering Warren's attitude toward the Alonzans, I found it unlikely Haddison was the kind of place we'd want to stay. Not that it mattered. There was no way we could accept this offer.
"I accept," said Cedric. "I'll work your claim as part of a larger arrangement to pay Adelaide's fee." I forcibly clamped my mouth shut so my jaw wouldn't drop. In the given circumstances, I had no intention of showing anything but perfect unity between Cedric and me. Once we were alone, I planned on telling him exactly how terrible this plan was. Jasper expressed my thoughts for me.
"Are you out of your mind? What do you know about mining?"
"No more than most of the adventurers who set off for the claims. I'm sure I can learn," said Cedric. Warren nodded.
"Absolutely. We'll get you started. Panning is the most basic type of gold extraction, and you can move on to other techniques from there."
"There's one condition," added Cedric. He took my hand again. "Adelaide comes too."
"First," snarled Viola, "you're in no position to set conditions. Second, you don't get to marry her before the financial details are fulfilled, unless you plan on some sort of sinful arrangement."
Cedric shook his head. "Of course not. But considering all the rumors and slander that will spread around Cape Triumph, I think it'd be best for her to be removed from that. Somewhere far away." Our eyes met briefly, and in that way we had, I understood his true motivations. Taking me from Cape Triumph would offer an added level of protection, should Viola decide to take any sort of revenge and reveal my identity. It would be a lot easier to elude bounty hunters in the wilderness than the city.
"I'll help him mine it," I said. "I've read about the panning process. It's something I could do.
Living on the claim with him would only stir up more rumors, regardless of your virtuous principles, Warren told me. But there are a number of families traveling with children, and I'm sure many would appreciate a governess with your education. We might be able to set up a boarding arrangement, though there might be some household labor involved, and the conditions would be rough. I'm sure household labor wouldn't be a problem, considering her humble background, quipped Viola. I'm not afraid of hard work, I said resolutely. Jasper looked me over. You're as naive as my son. However hard you think you worked as a lady's maid, it is nothing compared to what you'll face on the frontier. I'll do whatever it takes. Warren clasped his hands together, face alight. Well then, it's settled. We leave in a week, and I'll make the appropriate arrangements. Despite my declaration, I was still uneasy about all of this. It wasn't exactly too good to be true, but nearly. I needed to talk to Cedric more extensively, assuming we were ever allowed to be alone again. Jasper seemed to be undecided on this deal. He didn't really believe we could handle frontier life. I also suspected he didn't want us to have a happy ending after the trouble we'd caused him. On the other hand, painting this in a seemingly honorable way, one sanctioned by a man of Warren's repute who'd been courting me, might save face and ensure no future business fallout. Thank you, I said to Warren. This is all very considerate of you. A wistful look crossed his face. It's my pleasure to... The door burst open, and amazingly enough, it was Mira who entered. Jasper glared. I told you lot not to... They're here! They're here! I don't understand it, but they're here! Mira was breathless, her eyes wide. Who? Asked Jasper. I think he expected a flock of angry suitors. The other girls! The other ship! Mira turned to me. Adelaide! Tamsin's alive! Chapter 20 I rushed out with the others, all of us nearly tripping over one another as we tried to get through the doorway at the same time. In the foyer we found chaos. A group of at least 20 people mingled in the room, and our girls were running down the stairs into the throng, adding to the disarray. The noise of a dozen conversations filled the air, and mostly came through as an indecipherable buzz. I stared around for a moment, unable to make sense of it all. And then I spotted it across the room. A head of bright golden red hair. Tamsin! I pushed through the crowd, uncaring of who I ran into. She turned at the sound of my voice, and my heart sang at the sight of that familiar face. I barreled into her, nearly knocking her over with a giant hug. I didn't care if she hated me and pushed me away. All that mattered was that she was alive and that at this moment I could hold her in my arms. She was real and solid. My friend had returned to me. And she didn't push me away. She returned the hug, clinging to me fiercely. "Oh, Adelaide!" she began. Sobs choked her words. A moment later, Mira appeared, throwing her arms around the two of us. We stood there like that for a long time, the three of us locked together, full of joy despite our tears. "Where have you been, Tamsin?" I whispered when I could finally bring myself to pull away. Where have you been? We thought... Her brown eyes sparkled with tears. I know, I'm sorry. I wish we could have sent word sooner, and I'm sorry for everything back in Osfrid. No, I squeezed her hand. You have nothing to apologize for. Until that moment, I'd only been looking at Tamsin's face, taking in the features of this friend I loved so much. But now, after a chance to catch my breath, I could see so much more. She wore a dress of deep blue-gray, made of some plain fabric. It had no ornamentation or frills. Her hair spilled across her shoulders without any obvious styling, and was covered by a simple kerchief. Glancing around, I saw the other missing girls dressed similarly. "What happened to all of you?" I asked. Before she could answer, a loud stomping on the floor drew our attention. Gradually others began to notice, and the din of conversation faded. Jasper, seeking to be heard, stood on top of a chair. I was pretty sure I had never, ever seen him look so genuinely happy. "Friends! Friends, you're witnessing a miracle right before our eyes! Something none of us thought possible! I've just learned that, as you can no doubt tell, The great gull wasn't lost at sea. It sustained great damage in the storm and was blown off course, far, far north to the colony of Grashund. I turned to Tamsin in disbelief. The northern colonies were known both for harsh conditions and a harsh population. They were also nearly 400 miles away. Jasper peered around. He looked as though someone had just dropped a giant bag of gold at his feet, which I supposed someone had.
"Who do I have to thank for this? Who do I have to thank for saving my girls?"
For a moment, nothing happened. I could see now that along with our missing girls, there were some men who looked like sailors. A few other strangers were dressed in plain clothing like Tamsin, and one of these got pushed forward. He was a young man with tawny blonde hair and a surprisingly calm countenance, given this bizarre situation.
"I wouldn't say any one person saved them, Mr. Thorne," he said. "Our whole community came together to care for them until the roads were clear enough for travel."
A glittering court girl I didn't know spoke up.
"But Mr. Stewart was the one who advocated for us, who made sure we had places to stay and vocations to keep us busy."
"I'm in your debt, then, Mr. Stewart," said Jasper, offering a showy bow. "You have saved not just them, but all of us. Thank you."
A bit of the young man's coolness faltered at all the attention and admiration.
"You can call me Gideon, and there's no need to thank me. It was simply our duty under Euros. My only regret is that you had to worry about them for so long. The roads made no travel or communication possible until recently."
"Well, they're here now, and say what you want, but we still owe you a great deal, something I'd love to talk more at length about. But first, I need to speak to these gentlemen about certain commercial matters."
He nodded toward the sailors.
"While I do that, Gideon, my brother and son would be happy to entertain you and your colleagues in our parlor. I'm sure you'd appreciate some refreshments after your journey. I have an excellent brandy I've been saving."
"We don't drink spirits," said Gideon.
Jasper shrugged.
"Well, we'll find a beverage you can drink. Water or something? Mistress Culpepper, will you see that our new girls are taken care of? I'm sure they need refreshments, too."
He eyed some of them askance.
"And now that their journey is over, I'm sure they'd like to change out of traveling clothes and into their finer wares."
A few of the girls exchanged uneasy glances.
"We don't have those, finer wares anymore," said one. "They're gone."
Jasper allowed himself only a brief flicker of surprise. His miraculous pile of gold had just gotten a little smaller.
"Well, then, I'm sure we can put together a wardrobe from the other girls, especially the ones who are engaged."
"I'll see to it," said Mistress Culpepper, "and that they're roomed properly."
I pulled Tamsin close. "She's staying with us," I said. No one seemed to mind who stayed where, so long as there was room for all of us. The second floor of the house became a frenzy of activity, as girls were shown to their rooms, and everyone scrambled to provide the newcomers with clothes. Mira and I were raiding our own closets when Heloise popped into our room, her arms full of green dresses. She smiled warmly at Tamsin.
"You were the emerald, right? I inherited your spot, but I don't need these anymore. Not now that I'm engaged."
"Congratulations, and thank you."
The smile Tamsin gave her in return was genuine but tinged with weariness. After Heloise had left, Tamsin sat heavily on the bed, putting the dresses in a heap beside her.
"To tell you the truth, I don't care what color I wear anymore, so long as it's not this blasted cheap wool."
I sat down next to her.
"Was it awful up there?"
"Not awful exactly," Tamsin frowned, lost in some memory, "but very, very different than what we're used to. Gideon was right that they took care of us, and really that's all that matters."
I wanted more details about her time away, but Tamsin seemed reluctant. The Grashund settlers, who called themselves the heirs of Euros, just barely escaped the designation of heretics in the eyes of the Orthodox Church. The heirs kept the same liturgies and stressed the importance of priests and churches as the way to Euros, but they did so in a very simple way. No grand cathedrals, no gifts or decorations at holidays. No excessive food and drink. No elaborate clothing. When Mira suggested cleaning up, Tamsin jumped at the chance. While she was away, Mira explained to me. Maybe it wasn't awful like she said,
But it couldn't have been easy. And she must have been terrified. Sometimes when you go through something like that, it takes a while for you to want to talk about it. Once Tamsin returned, cleaned, and dressed in one of Heloise's silk poplin dresses, she seemed like her old self again. Very much like her old self again. "Well, I'd better remember all my manners and get used to doing my hair and face again," she said briskly. "It's late in the season, but I plan on making up for lost time. I hope you've left some men for the rest of us. You must have both gotten slews of offers by now." "Not that many in the way of, official ones," said Mira. "But I feel optimistic about my future." Tamsin turned to me. "What about you? There's no way you haven't had all sorts of offers. Have you settled on some promising young man?" When I didn't answer, Mira laughed. "She's settled on someone, all right. In fact, I think your arrival interrupted the marriage negotiations." Tamsin brightened. "Excellent! What kind of man is he? What's he do? Is he in government? Shipping?" "He's the son of a crafty businessman who ships brides and other luxuries to the New World," I said. "What are you..." Confusion filled Tamsin's pretty face. "But that doesn't make any..." "You don't mean..." I sighed. "I mean Cedric." When Tamsin couldn't formulate a response, Mira said, "It's true. Adelaide's caused quite a scandal round here. Your arrival might have been the only thing that could top this drama." I explained the situation as best I could, including the arrangement in Haddison. Mira hadn't heard that part yet. She kept her face neutral, but Tamsin's expression filled with greater incredulity as the story went on. "What were you thinking?" she exclaimed. "You turned down a future governor for, what, an impoverished student?" "Well, he dropped out of the university, and he's not impoverished." I reconsidered for a few moments. "He's just, without assets. But I'm sure that will change." "This," declared Tamsin, "would have never happened if I'd been around to look after you. Mira, how could you have stood for this?"
"I had no idea," Mira admitted.
"You're her roommate, how could you not?"
A moment of awkwardness fell over us. A chagrined look crossed Mira's face, and I could guess her thoughts. Under normal circumstances, she might very well have noticed something amiss with me, but we both knew Mira had been preoccupied by her own clandestine activities, though I still didn't know what they were. A knock at the door startled us, and I opened it to admit Cedric.
"You're not supposed to be in here," I said, glancing behind him in the hall. "Are you trying to get us in even more trouble?"
"I think that's impossible." He shut the door behind him. "And with everything going on, no one's going to notice. I had to take the chance to talk to you. Welcome back, Tamsin. It's good to see you." She eyed him disapprovingly.
"I wish I could say the same. I've heard you've caused all sorts of trouble for my friend."
He grinned back at her, unfazed. "Well, she's caused all sorts of trouble for me, too." "Cedric," I said, "you know this Haddison plan is a terrible idea, don't you? It could solve our financial problems. And," he added pointedly, "it gets you out of Cape Triumph." "I just can't believe Warren would fold so easily. It's an embarrassment to him. He should be outraged."
"He probably is," Cedric agreed. "And I'm not naive. But maybe this saves face, if he acts like it doesn't bother him. Could be there is some ulterior motive, but I'd rather take my chances out in Haddison."
Tamsin straightened up.
"So, this Warren, he's available then, right?"
"I suppose so," I said in surprise. "And he's motivated to find a wife, but he's only got a week left before he leaves."
"That's all I need."
Tamsin glanced at Cedric.
"If you can arrange some meetings for me."
"It's too soon," I said, "even for you." Mira nodded in agreement. "Tamsin, you need to rest and recover this week. Not chase after some man on your first day back. Take it easy, let Warren go. There are others." I studied Mira curiously, but as usual, her expression betrayed nothing. I remembered her various efforts to engage Warren. Now that he was available, was it possible she was trying to push out Tamsin as competition?
"Something tells me I'm not going to be part of the family business anymore," Cedric told Tamsin. "But if you want to throw yourself right into the thick of things, my father's not going to object. I know he'd like to close a deal with Warren, if you really want him."
Tamsin glanced between Mira and me.
It was obvious Tamsin was going to ignore our suggestions about resting. "Is there a reason I wouldn't want him?" she asked. No one answered right away. At last I said, "He seems nice enough most of the time. Sometimes he's closed-minded." "Closed-minded in what way?" Tamsin asked, with more interest than I'd expected. "Religion, the Akori. No more than most around here, I suppose. But his mother's the really terrible one. She's the one you have to watch out for." "Mothers-in-law are always terrible," said Tamsin airily. "Let me meet Warren, and I'll decide if he's worth my time." Cedric turned back and took both of my hands. The open gesture startled me. "Things are going to move very quickly now," he said. "We have 1 week. Most Harrison settlers have had months to prepare." I squeezed his hands back. "Well, if we're doing it, we'll do it right. How can I help?" "Most of it's going to be on me. Equipment, figuring out the claim." He reached into his pocket and handed me a bag of silver. "You can help by taking care of your clothes."
"What do you mean, take care of?"
He gestured to my organza dress. "This isn't going to really work in Haddison. You need something that can withstand some wear and tear."
"I figured you'd just mend anything I needed."
A little of his tension faded. "Well, I did enjoy that the first time."
"I knew it! You're not as good at hiding your thoughts as you think you are."
"Well, actually, you were the one who wasn't hiding that much."
"Ugh," groaned Tamsin behind me.
"Will you stop already? I just endured one agonizing situation. Please don't put me through another."
Cedric flashed her his winning smile, only to be met with a scowl.
Turning back to me, he closed my hand over the silver bag.
"I mean it. You're going to need a whole new wardrobe out there. I'll ask Ayana to help. She'll know what to get."
"Where did this silver come from?"
"I have some savings of my own."
I knew what those savings were for.
"Cedric, you can't."
"I can."
He rested a hand on my cheek.
"If this all works out, it won't matter."
There were no more protests to make. We'd signed on to this plan, and I wasn't going to argue with him any more. We would stand by each other and make this work. Hopefully.
"Just tell me this," I said.
"If things go horribly awry, can we just go run off into the wilderness together?"
"Sure. But we'd have to leave all civilization behind, sleep under the stars, wear animal skins."
"Hey, watch it,"
warned Tamsin. Cedric looked at her in surprise. There was nothing improper about that at all.
"I know what you were thinking.
Can I at least kiss her goodbye?"
"No," said Tamsin.
"And here I thought things were difficult before you got back."
Cedric dared a kiss on my cheek.
"We'll talk later. I've got to go break the news to Nicholas Addleton, assuming he hasn't already heard it from some gossip."
After Cedric was gone, Tamsin shook her head.
"I don't know how you got by without me."
Despite the complications with Cedric, I still couldn't get over the wonder of having her back. I gave her another fierce hug.
"Me either," I said. "Me either."
Chapter 21 Tamsin wasn't kidding about jumping right into the glittering court's busy world. Some of the new girls were clearly still in shock from all they'd endured. But for those, like Tamsin, who were ready to get back on track, Jasper had no problem helping them. A new wave of parties and one-on-one meetings were arranged for that week, and in no time Tamsin's reputation had spread, making her one of the most sought after. Mira and I helped prepare her as best we could for life in Cape Triumph, but she seemed to need little adjustment. The settlers from Grashund were still around, and while Tamsin was polite to them, I noticed she went out of her way to avoid them. They were a disapproving lot, and Gideon, the young minister who'd helped save them, seemed especially troubled by the glittering court's social whirlwind. Meanwhile, I dropped out of the public eye and began preparations of an entirely different nature. As Warren had predicted, there were a number of families who were interested in having an interim teacher while Haddison became established. I made an arrangement to help the children of multiple families with their studies. One of the families, the Marshalls, had a claim within riding distance of Cedric's and offered to give me room and board. Mistress Marshall was a stout, pleasant-faced woman with 6 children.
"We'll need the children to help around the homestead during the day," she told me in one of our meetings, "but you can help them with their lessons at night."
"That would be great," I said. "I could help Cedric on the claim during the day, if you don't need me around the house, that is. I want to earn my keep."
"If I need you, I'll let you know. But otherwise, I have no problem with you helping your young man. Provided you give me your word, nothing untoward will happen. And he'll need to escort you there and back each day. I can't have you traipsing through that wild land on your own. The arrangement suited me just fine, and I was excited that I'd get to help Cedric and hopefully wrap up this deal that much sooner. I saw little of him that week. He was busy, wrapped up in the logistics of supplies and claim arrangements. "You realize I'm one of the lucky ones," he told me one day. "There's actually some sort of shanty on the claim they've assigned me. Some prospector built it and then decided he didn't like being in the wilderness. I hear it's in disrepair, so I'll have to buy some things to fix it up. But most of the miners are living in tents and lean-tos." We were in the cellar where I'd finished the painting. Our relationship might be in the open, but we attracted too many prying eyes to feel comfortable speaking in public. "To think we first met in that drawing room," I mused, "and now this shanty is the height of luxury." "Nah, I hear the Marshall family has a cabin. You won't ever want to leave that palace to come see me." "I'll see as much of you as I can," I insisted, "though Mistress Marshall told me that nothing untoward had better happen." He leaned back against an iron-hinged chest, hands in his pockets. "Well, she doesn't need to worry about me. I'll be on best behavior." I stepped toward him and wrapped my arms around his neck. "Who said you're the one she has to worry about?" I leaned in, not for a true kiss, but just for the barest brush of my lips against his. I lingered for a few tantalizing moments, holding back despite his obvious interest in more. His hands gripped my waist when I pulled away, his fingers curling into me. "I should probably get going," I said lightly. "I have things to do."
"I could give you a few suggestions."
"Important frontier things to do," I amended. I trailed my fingers along the side of his neck. "Sorry if I led you on."
"You are not. You've been leading me on since the day I met you, and I've been dutifully following.
One day I'll catch you, and then..." His mouth found mine, and I wrapped myself against him. I wanted more than kisses, more than embraces. I wanted to banish all the space between us until it was impossible to know where I ended and he began. When we finally broke away, I could hardly stand and wondered who was really leading whom. "And then," I echoed with a sigh, "and then..." I did have other things to do, and as we parted ways, I reminded myself that Cedric and I would have more time on our hands on the journey to Haddison than we'd had together so far. As he'd suggested, Ayana was the one to take me into town to shop. I'd spent little time with the Balanquin woman, and was still fascinated by her. I came down Wisteria Hollow's main staircase, and was surprised to see Mira waiting with her by the door. "What's this?" I asked. Not that I was unhappy to have Mira there. Although she wasn't the busiest of the Glittering Quartz girls, she'd still been caught up in the routine of it all, while I simply cooled my heels. Mira looked far happier than she ever did about going out to a party.
"Who knows when we'll see you again, once you leave. We wanted to come along and get a little more Adelaide time in."
"We?"
"Tamsin should be down any minute. She was finishing a letter."
"She's still writing them?" I asked.
Tamsin had been in my thoughts constantly since the storm, but her obsessive letter-writing had slipped my mind.
"She had a whole bundle of them that she brought back from Grashunt. I guess she was still writing them there, and I heard her making inquiries about courier services back to Ostfried."
Tamsin came down the stairs just then, radiant in a gown of deep emerald taffeta that bared her shoulders.
"You know we're going to buy wilderness supplies, right?" I asked. "There's no formal luncheon planned."
Tamsin lifted her chin.
"It doesn't matter where we're going. I won't look anything less than perfect. You never know who'll be watching. Besides, I have a dinner engagement afterward. Warren's mother has invited me over."
"Well, I'm sure that'll be very interesting," I said, in as neutral a tone as I could manage. Tamsin had immediately honed in on him, and thus far he'd seemed to return her interest. Ayana said almost nothing as a carriage took us into the heart of Cape Triumph. She strode comfortably through the streets in her trousers and a long tunic, uncaring who gave her curious looks. It was hard to say if it was her attire or ethnicity that attracted attention, but in the diverse culture of Cape Triumph, I didn't think she stood out that much. Tamsin certainly stood out as well, but those who looked her over said nothing impolite. I think the sight of fierce Ayana at her side kept them at bay. This was the first time I'd really been out in the crowds, rather than just viewing them from a carriage. It was hard not to stop and stare at everything. The shops and restaurants offered nearly as much as I might find in a busy district of Osro. Like everything else in the New World, though, there was a tentative feel to it. None of that old, established solidity. Some of the businesses had made good attempts at respectability, with glass windows and well-fortified buildings. Others could have been thrown together that day, with hastily written signs and a fragility that suggested they might fall over at any moment. It was all fascinating and overwhelming at the same time, and despite her show of confidence, I could tell Tamsin was daunted too. Mira moved effortlessly, as though she walked the streets all the time. For all I knew, she did. We passed fishermen and lumberjacks doggedly going to their jobs. Adoria's aristocrats strode haughtily through, flanked by servants. One young man with a long wig and flamboyant purple coat stopped to bow and take his plumed hat off before us in a gallant gesture. Ayana rolled her eyes when we moved past him. "One of the idle elite, as we call them. The sons of wealthy settlers with nothing to do, so they dress like that and think they're pirates or some such nonsense. Except pirates do more work than they do. They need to spend a day with Tom Shortsleeves or one of the others." "Are all those pirate stories real?" I asked. "The heroic ones and the cruel ones?" "Embellished, but real. All stories have a seed of truth." She took me to one of the more reputable-looking shops, with Winslow and Elliot Outfitters etched on the glass window. Stepping inside, I saw all sorts of gear and supplies that one might need in setting off on an adventure to unknown lands. Two young men spoke to another man behind the counter, and when I caught a glimpse of him, I was surprised to recognize his face. I nudged Mira, who was studying a pair of leather boots.
"Hey, remember Grant Elliot from the ship? He's working here."
"Who?" she asked, not really paying attention to me. Grant walked through the store to fetch a saddle for his customers, his eyes sliding over us in surprise. He nodded a greeting to Ayana.
"Kidika hakta," she said.
"Manasta,"
he replied gruffly. Ayana meandered away from us to study a display of canteens, and I hurried after her.
"What was that you said?"
"My native tongue. Mr. Elliot is half Belonquin."
"Is he?" I looked back at him, hoping my scrutiny wasn't obvious. Although he had black hair like Ayana, there was nothing about him that would have suggested he wasn't an ordinary Osfridian. I wouldn't have guessed it.
"I think he prefers it that way. It'd be much harder to run a business in Cape Triumph if people knew the truth about his background."
"How did you end up in Cape Triumph?" I asked, if it's not rude of me to ask.
"Not at all. I ran away, to escape an unhappy marriage. It had been arranged against my wishes, but my wife and I weren't compatible."
"Your wife?" I asked, wondering if she'd had some sort of translation issue.
"My wife," she affirmed. "The Belonquins don't look down on same-sex relations the way your people do."
I didn't answer right away. "Look down" was putting it mildly, since such things were considered a great sin by the priests of Euros, possibly more so than being an Alanzan.
"Did you leave because you didn't want to be with a woman?"
She grinned.
"I have no problem being with women. Just not that one." She was unkind, to put it mildly. "I came to your colonies wanting to learn about your culture firsthand, and eventually fell in with the Thorns. Jasper offered me a job, and as you might imagine, I had a particular interest in looking after girls who were being sold off to men they hardly knew."
Is that why you dress like you do? Like a man? Because you prefer women?" As soon as the words left my mouth, I felt like an idiot. Ayana's laughter only intensified that feeling.
"I dress like this because it's more comfortable than all those ridiculous skirts and petticoats the rest of you prance around in. And as you'll soon see, you'll be dressing the same. You aren't going to work a gold claim in a ball gown."
With that, she left me gaping and went to the counter to speak to a now free Grant. I found Tamsin and Mira on the other side of the store, sifting through bolts of fabric. Tamsin held up a piece of coarsely woven linen.
"I wouldn't use this to scrub a floor."
"I remember the dress you came in wearing," said Mira. "It wasn't nearly in such good condition." "Even so, I'm not going to start wearing this stuff again for the sake of nostalgia."
Tamsin regarded me sorrowfully.
"Damn, Adelaide. I hope you can at least get something in organdy."
"Adelaide," called Ayana, "we need to measure you."
Tamsin came with me out of curiosity, but Mira stayed to further examine the loose fabrics. Grant looked much as he did on the ship, handsome, decently dressed, but messy around the edges. When we reached the counter, he looked us over.
"So who's the lucky explorer?"
he asked.
"Me," I said.
"Off to Haddison with Doyle, eh? Quite an adventure ahead of you." Tamsin fixed him with an imperious look. "That's Governor Doyle. Please address my fiancé by his proper title." We all looked at her in astonishment, and she turned sheepish. "Well, I mean, he's not my fiancé, not yet. I'm going to work on that."
"And not really governor yet, either," Grant pointed out with a smile. "But who's keeping track?"
Ayana snapped at him in Balanquin, which he responded to good-naturedly. I thought back to how he'd always spoken so politely during shipboard encounters, and then been so gruff during the storm. I supposed stress could bring out the worst in everyone, because he seemed perfectly fine now as he gauged my size, keeping a proper distance with his measuring tape. There was no time to have custom clothing made from the raw materials he sold, but there was plenty of ready-made attire in the store. The sizes were close enough to get me by for now, and adjustments could always be made later. I didn't end up with an exact replica of Ayana's attire, but it was pretty close. Wide-legged pants of soft suede that almost looked like a skirt when I stood, plain, serviceable blouses, and a knee-length leather coat to go over them when the weather turned cold. Sturdy gloves and boots with no embellishment.
"Sorry I can't match the dresses you're used to, but these'll keep you a lot more comfortable."
Grant studied me a few moments more.
"And a hat. You'll want one for your skin. But I'm afraid it might not help much."
He produced a wide-brimmed leather one from behind the counter. "Why not?" I asked.
"The weather's more extreme. Those summer days'll scorch you. What are you going to be doing out there? You might be okay if you're doing chores inside."
"I'm going to help pan for gold." He pondered this for a long moment, saying nothing. Finally, he took the hat back and produced one with a wider brim.
"It'll be brutal. Good luck."
Once we were outside, Tamsin immediately asked, "What he said about it being brutal? Adelaide, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to go to Haddison?"
"I'm sure I want to be with Cedric," I said simply.
"And I'll go down whatever path that involves. Besides, don't you want to go to Haddison?"
"Yes, and live in the governor's mansion. Not a riverbed."
Mira touched my arm as we were about to turn down the road that would lead us out of the city center to our carriage.
"Look over there, by the bank."
I followed her gaze. "Oh, excuse me a moment." I hurried across the thoroughfare and called, "Mr. Addleton!" Nicholas, who'd been about to walk into the building, turned in surprise.
"Miss Bailey, I didn't expect to see you here. I thought you'd be on your way to Haddison."
"Soon," I said, feeling my cheeks flush. "I know Cedric talked to you, but I just had to come myself and say, well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what we put you through. You must feel so, I don't know, deceived."
He grew thoughtful.
"Not exactly. A little disappointed, perhaps. But honestly, I was more dazzled by you than in love with you, if you don't take offense to that."
"Not at all. We had only a few meetings."
"Exactly. If I'd felt more, my reaction might have been different. But I could always tell there was something preoccupying you. So long as you were entering of your own free will, I didn't mind. I figured it was the nature of these sorts of arranged marriages."
"I would have done it of my own free will," I said adamantly. "You're a good man. The best I've met here.
Excepting young Mr. Thorne, of course." He smiled at my chagrin.
"Don't feel bad. I'm happy for you."
I sighed. "That's kind of you. But I can't shake the feeling you've been used. You know, there are a number of other glittering court girls I could recommend." He held up a hand to silence me.
"Thank you, but I'm done with making matches that sound good on paper. The more I think about your grand romance with Mr. Thorne, the more I think I'm better off finding one of my own. No contracts."
"I hope you find one," I said earnestly. He shook my hand.
"Me too. And I wish you well. If I can ever be of service, let me know."
"Who is that?" Tamsin asked when I returned to my friends. "The man Cedric nearly married me off to." Tamsin peered behind me to get a better look. "Is he available?"
"Yes, but not that well off.
Or really interested after what Cedric and I put him through." I fell into step with Ayana while Mira trailed behind with Tamsin.
"Mr. Addleton seems to be taking things reasonably well," Ayana said to me quietly.
"Everyone has. Well, not Jasper, and some of the girls are still holding it over me. Clara, in particular, enjoyed telling the story of how she'd found Cedric and me in the attic to everyone she met. But most people have been understanding, even when they probably shouldn't be, including Warren Doyle." Ayana took a long time to answer.
"Yes, it certainly was understanding of him, making such an offer to you."
I thought back to the shop, and then cast a quick glance back to make sure Tamsin was still engaged with Mira. His mother isn't the most, upstanding of women. But as for Warren, do you think he's... Well, I mean, should we...
"I don't know," said Ayana. "I really don't know much about Warren Doyle, short of gossip. What I do know is that when things sound too good to be true, well, they usually are."
Uneasiness settled over me. I tried telling that to Cedric, but he said even if there's some ploy going on, we were better off taking our chances in Haddison.
"He may be right."
Ayana stopped walking to look me in the eye.
"There's more freedom there, but more danger, too. It's a fledgling land, an untamed land, and that makes it easier for people to break the rules. I wish you two the best. But..."
"But what?" I prompted.
"Trust each other there," she said at last. "But no one else."
Chapter 22. I'd hoped to see both Tamsin and Mira the night before I left for Haddison. A party kept them late, however, and I found myself sitting alone in our bedroom, pondering whether I should get some sleep or not. I knew the journey ahead was going to be tiring, but I couldn't stand the thought of missing out on seeing my best friends. That, and I wasn't sure my nerves would let me sleep anyway. The two of them finally came in after midnight, catching me mid-yawn. Both put on smiles upon seeing me awake, but I could instantly detect a difference in their moods. Mira seemed subdued, while Tamsin was exuberant. "What happened?" I asked her. She began unlacing her emerald-green satin overdress. "Nothing official, but something pretty unofficially serious." "Isn't that a sort of contradiction?" I asked, shooting a conspiratorial look at Mira. She didn't share my amusement. "Warren asked me to wait for him," said Tamsin proudly. "He didn't promise an engagement, yet, but said I was by far his favorite, and that he'd like to make things official with me when he returns. So I promised not to enter into any arrangements until then. Though, of course, I'll still go out. No point in sitting around here bored." I frowned, troubled by a number of things. "When he returns? But that could be a very long time." "It'll be in 2 weeks, actually." Tamsin had wiggled out of the dress and now sat in her chemise and petticoats. "He'll go with your party tomorrow, get things established, and then sail back to report on Haddison's affairs and solicit any other help." "I suppose that makes sense, but he won't be in Haddison for long." Haddison's inhospitable coastline made it difficult for large ships to get close, so any substantial shipments of cargo, animals, and other materials needed to be moved overland. That was the way my party would be traveling tomorrow, circling the bay through Denham's territory and then into Haddison. The trip took a little over a week. Individuals sailing straight across the bay in small boats could do so in a day. It was useful for messengers and those without cargo, but little more. "Well, I'm sure he'll be back soon, possibly with a wife in tow." Tamsin was shining with pride. "I hope it won't be awkward if you're one of my citizens, Adelaide." I laughed at that. "Not at all." "You must be excited," said Mira. She looked eager to change the subject. "A great adventure ahead of you."
"I don't care about the adventure. I just want everything to be settled with Cedric."
I spoke boldly and earned looks of admiration and wistfulness. Tamsin might treat marriage pragmatically, and Mira might treat it with indifference, but I frequently had the sense that both were fascinated with, and even a little jealous of, the romantic love I'd stumbled into. The three of us stayed up late and talked about the future. I didn't want to tell them the truth, that I was a bit terrified of what was to come. Not with Cedric, of course. Leaving a noblewoman's life for that of an upper-class colonial citizen in a well-established city wasn't as big a leap as it might seem. But going from nobility to a commoner in a vast, unsettled wilderness? That was something altogether different, and I had no idea what to expect. Mira and Tamsin were allowed to see me off the next morning. The party leaving for Haddison was far bigger than I expected. They gathered on the edge of town, a vast cavalcade of horses, wagons, and people in seeming disarray. Warren was near the front, looking splendid on a white horse as he spoke to several other men, who seemed to be advisers. Another rider trotted up to us, and I did a double take when I saw it was Cedric.
"Are you on a horse?" I exclaimed.
He shot me a wry look.
"You don't have to make it sound quite so outlandish."
"I just didn't even know you could ride." I looked the horse over. She was a shaggy brown mare who seemed to be bored with everything going on around her. "I hope you didn't pay a lot for her." "I wasn't aware you were such an expert." I understood the cautioning tone in his voice. Horseback riding was a common pastime for the nobility in Osfrid when they were at the country manors. Here, in Adoria, many settlers rode horses for survival, but a city commoner like my Adelaide identity would never interact with a horse outside of practical transport. I would have expected the same for someone like Cedric.
"I've seen them around, that's all," I said.
I had to restrain myself from correcting the awkward way he sat his saddle and held the reins.
"Well, she's tougher than she looks," he assured me. "I call her Lizzie."
I tried not to roll my eyes. "Great choice." Looking around, I saw that Tamsin was up talking to Warren, her face shining. Mira, too, had disappeared, and moments later I spied her listening to some men making plans to explore Haddison. Not far from her was Grant Elliot, who appeared to be delivering some last-minute supplies.
"My allies have abandoned me," I remarked.
Cedric leaned down and brushed some wayward tendrils from my face. The intimacy startled me, until I realized we had nothing left to hide.
"You've still got your number one ally," he said,
although he frowned when he saw whom I'd been watching. Grant Elliot seemed decent enough on the ship, but it turns out he's joined Warren's group of heretic hunters.
"Heretic hunters?"
"Yeah, there's a group of them promising to keep order while Warren's away, and find the Star Advent Alansans who escaped from jail. Grant's among them."
"Well, then I'm sorry I gave him my business."
I touched the wide-brimmed hat on my head. "Maybe I should try to return this."
"Don't," said Cedric. "It's cute."
I wished I could ride, too, but the meager funds he and I shared couldn't cover a second horse. That and my riding skills would have raised suspicions. Instead, I'd be riding in the marshal's wagon, something that sounded more luxurious than the reality. It was a plain, rough-planked contraption, packed with various supplies that the children and I would have to squeeze in around. It had no top, and I hoped we wouldn't run into any rain. At last Warren called for everyone's attention.
"It's time," he called, his voice ringing above the throng. "Time to claim our destiny."
Settlers and well-wishers alike cheered, and even I couldn't help getting caught up in the spirit of adventure. I hugged Tamsin and Mira goodbye, and then climbed up into the back of the wagon. I was saving the split skirts for when we reached Haddison. For the journey, I was in a calico dress that was as bare bones as one could get. No chemise, no petticoats, just a simple lining underneath. If not for the floral print, it could have passed for one of the Grashon dresses. My spot in the wagon was a cramped and narrow one between two bundled crates. The planks I had to sit on were dirty and worn, and trying to clean them only resulted in getting splinters. 5 minutes into the ride, I learned that there was no shock absorption of any kind. I leaned back against the wagon's side, thinking of what we'd always called the Rose Parlour back in my family's Osfro home. Elaborately designed rugs covering every inch of the floor, velvet-covered wallpaper, one-of-a-kind paintings, vases imported from the Zin lands far to the east, chairs and sofas with padding so thick you would sink into them. And of course, everything was meticulously cleaned on a daily basis by a flock of servants.
"What's wrong?"
asked one of the Marshall girls. Her name was Sarah. I glanced over at Cedric riding that ridiculous horse.
"Nothing. Just thinking I've come a long ways."
Within an hour we were out of the city's limits, past the fort and its skeleton crew of soldiers. A few hours after that, we'd moved past all of Cape Triumph's small outlying settlements. I'd thought the wilderness had a claim on that town, but I was wrong. The far reaches of Denham Colony looked as though no human had ever touched them. The towering trees that had stood like sentinels in Cape Triumph now formed a veritable army, side by side, at times making the rough road difficult to traverse. It was fascinating, breathtaking, terrifying. The real new world. My starry-eyed enthusiasm didn't last long. When we called a halt for the night, my legs nearly collapsed underneath me when I got out of the wagon. The constant shaking in close quarters had cramped my muscles, producing a soreness I would have expected only after running uphill for 5 hours. Dinner was dried biscuits and jerky, little better than the ship's fare. Fires were built for heat and boiling water, and I was sent to gather wood from fallen branches. Mostly I seemed to gather splinters. Cedric, like most of the younger men in the party, was kept busy with various jobs, so after a quick smile at dinner time he disappeared for the rest of the evening. When bedtime came, Mr. and Mistress Marshall slept in the wagon, while the rest of the kids and I made beds of blankets on the ground. The earth below me was hard and uneven. The blanket couldn't keep me warm as night's chill deepened, so I'd added my long leather coat. I was still cold, and I was pretty sure every mosquito in the colony had found me. I tossed and turned, my frustration keeping me awake almost as much as the harsh conditions did. I found myself again thinking of my Osro townhouse. This time I was obsessed with memories of my bed. A mattress big enough for 5 people. Silk sheets scented with lavender. As many blankets as you needed on a cold night. I didn't realize right away that I was crying. When I did, I quickly got up before any of the children sleeping near me woke and noticed. Wrapping a thin blanket around me, I hurried away from the wagon, slipping through groups of other sleeping settlers. A few still sat by fires, dicing and telling stories, but they paid little attention to me. I moved as far to the camp's edge as I dared, enough to give me privacy but not venture into the wild unknown. There I sat down miserably and buried my face in my hands, trying to keep my sobs as quiet as possible. I couldn't stand the thought of my weakness getting back to Warren. I had this horrible image of him looking down at me with a too kind expression, saying sympathetically, "You could have been my wife. You could have traveled in the padded carriage and slept in my tent." I'd seen one of his men haul a mattress into it earlier. A hand touched my shoulder, and I jumped to my feet. Cedric stood there, shadows playing over his startled face. He'd been busy with his own chores, and I hadn't seen him all evening. "It is you. I didn't mean to scare you." I furiously wiped at my face. "What are you doing here?" "I went over to the Marshall wagon hoping to steal you for a quick word. When you weren't there, I started searching around." He reached for my face, but I pulled back. "What's wrong?"
"Nothing."
"Adelaide, I'm serious. What's wrong?" I threw up my hands.
"Pick something, Cedric. Using my skirt as a napkin at dinner tonight. No bathrooms. I keep swallowing gnats. And the smell. I get that bathing will be limited on this trip, but didn't any of them do it before we left? It's only been one day."
"You knew this wouldn't be easy," he said quietly. "Do you regret it? Do you regret...
us?" I finished.
"No, not for an instant. And that leads to the worst part of all, hating myself for feeling this way. I hate listening to myself whine. I hate that I'm too weak to put our love above these conditions." "No one said you had to love it out here."
"You do."
"I saw your face once we were truly clear of the Cape Triumph settlements. This is some kind of spiritual experience for you." He held up his hands. From the glow of scattered fires, I could see dirt and cuts. His face was dirty, too. "This isn't that spiritual. Neither is the guy who keeps saying my face is too pretty and he wants to break my nose. And you wouldn't believe how sore I am after being on that horse all day."
"Oh, I can believe it.
But you aren't letting it get to you. You're not that weak." He drew me to him, and this time I didn't resist. "You aren't weak. But for the first time in your life, you aren't good at everything. The world rotated around you in Osro and told you that you could do no wrong. At Blue Spring, despite some mishaps, you were still the best in all your studies. And in Cape Triumph, you were the star of the glittering court. Out here, you're miserable, useless, adjusting. This is the first day, and it's a shock. You'll get used to it as the trip goes on. And once you're in Haddison with a roof over you, you'll think you've gone back to an Osfridian palace." I let those words sink in. "Speaking of roofs, what happens if it rains out here?" one worry at a time. He smiled in that bewitching way he had. That way that said he could take care of everything. But could he this time?
I'm tired, Cedric. So, so tired. It was a long day, but I can't sleep. The ground's horrible and I'm cold. How can it be this cold? It's spring.
He took my hand and pulled me down. I can't do anything about the ground, but I can help with the cold. He had a thin blanket of his own, and he spread both of ours on the ground. Lying down, he urged me to do the same, and we snuggled together, each of us trying to wrap the other in our respective coats. The ground was still bumpy, but with his body against mine and the sound of his heart beat by my ear, I didn't mind as much.
"We can't stay like this," I said. "We'll get in trouble if we're caught."
"We'll go back before dawn."
"How will we know?"
"I'll know." I felt warmth settle around me, and the first glimmers of drowsiness seeping in.
"I will do anything for us," I said through a yawn. "I hope you know that."
"I've never doubted it." He kissed the top of my head.
"You can give me a better kiss than that if you want."
"I do want to, but you need to sleep. Maybe tomorrow night, when you're better rested." I fought another yawn.
"Some things don't change.
You're so full of yourself, Cedric Thorne. Certain I'll just sleep next to you again tomorrow. We're not married yet. I haven't taken any vows to lie with you under the moon." He kissed the top of my head again. I melted into the security of his body and felt true happiness burn through me. After several minutes, I asked, "Cedric?" His breathing had grown steady, and I wondered if he was asleep. Then,
"Yes?" "You smell good. You're the only thing that smells good out here. Is that from putting on the vetiver this morning, or did you bring it with you?"
"I brought it with me." I moved closer to him.
"Thank you, Eros."
As promised, Cedric woke up just before sunrise, so that we could each go back to our respective places before we were missed. My body still ached, but waking up next to Cedric made me not notice the pain as much.
"Is that some Alanzan thing?"
I whispered before we parted.
"Are you synced with the sun?"
"It's something I've done since childhood. I've always been a restless sleeper." He squinted over at the eastern sky and raised a hand in salute. "But maybe it's some gift I didn't even know I had. Right from Alanziel herself." Seeing the golden dawn play over Cedric's features and cast a fiery hue to his hair, I could very well believe he was favored by the patron angel of passionate love. As I returned to the martial wagon, I felt better than I had the previous night. Both venting and getting rest had given me new perspective. Cedric had been right. There was no question these were harsh conditions. Anyone would have difficulty. But it was truly the most out of my depth I'd ever felt in my life. Which was saying something after assuming someone else's identity. I had to be patient with myself as I figured this out. And I did, in the days to come. I still didn't like the food or sleeping on the ground, but at least it didn't rain. Cedric and I continued spending our nights together at the camp's edge, and as the caravan fell into a routine, he spent more time with me in the day. Having such a large party, we moved pretty slowly. He and I could walk together, leading the horse, and easily keep pace with the others. The rough terrain and increasing elevation made it tiring, but I gradually toughened up. "Grant Elliot was right about the sun," I told Cedric one day. It was a few days into our trip. We were on a lunch break, sitting off by ourselves in the shade.
"What did he say?"
"That it was brutal." I held up my hands for examination. "Look how tan these are already. I can't even imagine how my face must look."
"Beautiful, as always," said Cedric.
He tore apart a piece of jerky and handed half to me. "You didn't even look."
"I don't have to."
But he did glance up and study my face. "I think you're getting a few freckles. They're cute."
"Don't tell Tamsin that. She's always trying to hide hers.
And my grandmother would faint if she could see me." I'd started off flippant, but felt my heart sink as I thought of Grandmama. "You know, when I heard she was looking for me, I first worried because of the obvious trouble I could get in. But what really bothers me about it now is knowing that she's still searching. She doesn't know what happened to me, but still wants me. She hasn't given up."
"Of course she hasn't. It isn't in the Whitmore blood. I mean, Bailey blood.
At least I assume it isn't in the Bailey blood to give up. I thought about my former maid. Well,